Hey everyone, on April 6th, I'm releasing my first book. It's called Joe Pardo's 31 Life-Changing Concepts, and it's a self-development book designed for people who hate reading books. So I filled it with lots of my own hand-drawn artwork. In order to make this launch a success, I need your help. Go to howtodream.co/book to get all the instructions. I really appreciate your help in advance, and I really would love to make this launch a success. So again, go to howtodream.co/book for all the details how you can get involved and help. The book will be free for the first 5 days. I hope you all have a magical day.
This is the Dreamers Podcast, where dreamers share their stories to inspire you. Now, join host Joe Pardo as he interviews a dreamer who's living their dreams.
Hey dreamers, I'm Joe Pardo, and today I am talking with Sam Shelley, who is here in my studio today. And we're going to talk about how he's making his dreams come true by making people stop the police in their head and not the band. Glad to have you on, Sam.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for having me. Great to see you today. Great to be here in your studio.
Yeah, it's nice to meet you in person. We've done quite a few Let's Talk Google Let's Talk Podcast Google Hangouts.
Right.
In the past.
So you're still having trouble with words, I see.
Well, you know, that was some weird, freaky stuff going on in the room. It didn't come out quite right. But there's some weird spirit dust or orb or something. Whatever was going on behind me was not cool. And it was definitely freaking me out. So, Sam, why don't you get started by giving some background about yourself? Because you have an amazing story. I have your book sitting in front of me called I Don't Dwell. And I think that your story is going to help a lot of people, and especially not just in a inspirational sense, but in a spiritual sense.
Right. So my big thing was I was a very shy child. I was very, very anxious, very scared of the world. Then I was hit by a van when I was 6 years old, and near it took my life. And from the six-year-old accident, just really kept me in a state of worry and fear. So I really worried myself sick. So by the time I was in my teens, I was an undiagnosed bipolar, and high school was a real interesting challenge. And by the time I was in my 20s, I was finally diagnosed with bipolar. Then I had all these cops in my head that I wasn't good enough, that I wasn't worthy of life. Then I had all these issues. Then I still was in the state of fear. Even though I was taking all this medicine, I was still in a state of fear and stress, and I acquired all these autoimmune diseases. The last one I acquired was multiple sclerosis. At the time I was diagnosed, I was actually in the hospital because I couldn't walk. I could barely see. I couldn't really hear that well. I couldn't swallow that well. My whole body was shutting down. Then I had all these people coming to me telling me, oh, you're going to be stuck in a wheelchair. This is going to happen to you. This is going to happen to you. Like all this dread they would put upon you. Like I gave up hope. I thought life was over at that point. So then one day I just found meditation, because one of the benefits of meditation was inner peace. I'm like, I need this meditation. So I just didn't have a teacher, so I just sat there that night and tried not to react to all the thoughts or respond to all the thoughts. So I just had a very simple practice, 5 minutes a day. Then after 3 months, I was 10 minutes in the morning, 10 minutes in the evening. The thoughts were getting quieter. Then I just heard a voice in my head say, perfect spirit. I'm like, that's it. Spirit is whole. It's body and mind that are damaged. Then I can't explain it. I just simply knew that all was well. Just this real deep sense that all was well. All sense of fear about my health was just gone. And then my health challenge was just gone that day. So then it took like 18 months to get off all the medication, because I was taking 24 pills a day, 13 medications. I needed my cane. I mean, I was a real mess. So I had to recover the body and mind. And it took 18 months to do that. So now I want to give people hope that they are not hopeless. You just have to do a little bit of work to get out of that mental state that they may be in that's keeping them trapped. Like I could have been in that world like, oh, my doctor knows the best way, but I found like meditation on my own. I went out exploring and I kept myself open. Before I was always closed down, like, oh, the doctors know best. And I was like, no, the doctors don't know best. They don't know my body. They're not living in my body. So how do they know best? That's why they call it a medical practice. They're taking their best knowledge from other people and try to come up a plan for you, but it may be not ideal for you. So it's just their best guess. So you know your body the best. So just listen to your body. And I help people listen to their body by stopping their cops in their head and learning to trust themselves. It all comes down to trusting ourselves and just having faith that I'm not hopeless. There is hope, that I am enough. And it's just the cops in our head that are always creating limitations.
I think it's important for people to remember that medication is science, but that being a doctor is more of an art,
right?
You know, because you have to know what works and what doesn't work, the chemistry behind it and all that stuff. And while the medication is based on science, the actual administering of it is more of an art form.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. So I could see, you know, and I've heard this type of story over and over and over again, right? People are like over medicated to the point of where you say you're 24 pills
yeah.
a day,
yeah.
a day. That's a lot. I mean, that's way too much. Right.
Yeah.
And you know, it's amazing that it took you that long, 18 months to wean yourself down off of all of that.
Yes.
It's also good that you probably didn't just stop all of it all at once, because you probably would have lost your mind even further, you know, trying to go through all the different withdrawals of all these pills that you were taking.
Right.
You know, yeah, definitely. You can't always necessarily find the answer in a pill. And that's, you know, what I'm thinking is like, it's, you know, being a doctor is more of an art.
Right.
And that's why things like some new age medications and stuff like that can be used. They can be used either in supplement or in some case as a whole.
Right. So I say like medicine as like an aid just to help you through this period of time. They shouldn't be taken for your whole life. Like with the bipolar, you're supposed to be taking medicine for your whole life. For multiple sclerosis, your whole life. Like they had this medicine for your whole life, but it should be more like a temporary aid for these other methods to explore. So people aren't really exploring, like, take this medicine for now and just go explore while you're taking this medicine. See if you can find something to actually take one of the medicines back or something that you don't need. Maybe if you do a meditation practice, maybe you don't need as much bipolar medicine. Maybe you can cut that back a little bit. But until you get a little exploring and you just explore and you talk to your doctors about it and you just explore and say, I want to try meditation and see what this does for me. Or I want to try mindfulness practice, see what this does for me. And maybe you'll wean back your medicine a little bit. I took a big risk. I know it was a big risk. I don't recommend everybody just wean themselves off medication. That probably wasn't the safest thing to do, but I just had this deep sense that all was well. For some people, they just can't get into this disillusion that, oh, he went off all of his medicine, I should go off all my medicine. That might not be true for you. You just have to find your way.
Definitely, definitely. You have to know how to listen to your body and listen to your senses. And I mean, it comes down to listening to your body, but it takes a long time to get to that point, to know when you're pushing yourself or you're putting yourself in a bad position. And with bipolar disorder, I'd imagine that'd be tough to necessarily be able to do that, because you're not in the right frame of mind at all times to be able to listen.
Right. So that's why you had this. That's why I start with this simple 5-minute practice. That's all my bipolar brain could have handled was 5 minutes of sitting in silence. So I just knew this would take it slow. And after 3 months, big changes, but I never knew that was going to happen. I just wanted some inner peace.
And it's amazing that you were able to find it. So congratulations. So why don't we talk about the first steps that you took once you found that inner peace, after you got off the medication and you decided that you wanted to start to help other people find their spiritual balance. Is that the right word, balance?
Yeah, I could call it their spiritual balance, or just their finding their true self outside of thoughts. Like all of these thoughts in our head aren't the absolute truth. We take them as the absolute truth. I know as a bipolar, I took all my thoughts as the truth, the opinions of others as the truth, and beliefs of others as the truth. And I was saying in meditation, wait, none of these thoughts are true, are the absolute truth. They're only true from a limited perspective. So from meditation, I was able to see that, saying, hey, all these thoughts aren't quite true.
Now, is that because it wasn't you? It wasn't your, like, it doesn't necessarily work for you? Because I guess the idea is, like I mentioned before the interview, was that it's not like you came up with a 12-step or a 5-step or some sort of step process that anybody could do and they just get in the right frame of mind and find their true self.
Yeah, that's why I did it in my book. I listed all the steps that I did, and it was just intuitions like, oh, I need to switch over to mostly drinking water. I got to cut back to caffeine. I got to start doing yoga to recover the body. I just had all this information like, oh, I need to do this now. I need to do this now. Like I needed to stop watching all this fear-based programming that we see on TV because that was keeping me locked in a state of fear. So I had to make all these small little changes, and all these small changes that had big results. So that's what I want to help people now is to say, hey, just take these little steps and see where you are in a week or two or three. You know, sit for 5 minutes a day and we'll talk in a month and see how you're feeling. You're probably feeling it better because the thoughts will slow down a little bit.
Well, as an overthinker myself, I know that it's tough to turn them thoughts off, especially trying to just go to sleep, you know, yeah. Unless I'm dead tired, like dead tired. It's hard to close my eyes to go to sleep. So how did you, like, so you got to the book. How did you arrive to the book?
Everybody was requesting that I write a book about what I did because my friends would used to see me like disabled. My friends and family would see me like walking around with my cane, my cooling vest in the summer if it was hot because of the multiple sclerosis. The body will shut down. Anything above 70 degrees, I have to wear a cooling vest with multiple sclerosis because it affects all the nerves in the body. It's a brain and spinal cord disease. So they wear a cooling vest. Yeah, so it was just a matter of just taking that time for myself. So the book came after all the people were seeing, like, this formerly disabled man is no longer disabled. So they're like, hey, what's going on here? And you're not taking medicine anymore? They had all these questions. And I can see that I didn't really have a clear plan. It wasn't written down. I was just going along. So when I came to write the books, like, then I had to go back and revisit everything that I did, that whole process. So I put, like, 12 or 15 of my own steps into the book that I did through. And that was the thing that really made a difference for me was getting out there, saying, hey, here's the steps I did. See if any of these steps will work for you. They may. So that's why I help people now, just find what works for them. Some people insist they can't meditate or they can't do mindfulness exercises. I ran into somebody that loved watching football. I turned his football watching into a spiritual practice.
Care to elaborate that?
It was a Dallas game. I remember I was on California. It was a Dallas game and Tony Romo was hurt. Like Tony Romo got hurt on a play and he's like, oh, he was coming up with all these opinions about like Tony Romo, what Jerry Jones was thinking. And I was questioning like, how do you know that's really true, that opinion? How do you know that Jerry's really worried about Tony's injury or is he worried about business or are you worried about the person? How do you really know what he's thinking? And I was questioning his thoughts, like, how do you know that's really true? And to question his opinions and questioning your opinions is a spiritual practice.
That's really interesting. I've never heard that before. How did he take that? Like, what was his reaction when you started asking questions? Was he starting to like, was like smoke coming out of the ears or?
Well, he was saying like, yeah, my thoughts aren't the absolute truth. It's just my opinion, but it's not true. But I'm believing that it's true. So it's a little bit of mind blow for him, but he understood. He immediately questioned his thoughts. And that's what I want people to do is question your thoughts.
You know, I feel like you could have this conversation with the people on like sports talk radio on the like on the AM FM radio talking to or about all the people that are calling in with their absolute opinions about everything that's going on in the sports world.
It would be a lot of fun. It's like, how do you know that opinion is true? Prove it.
Yeah, because they're the closest people to the situation to know every aspect and every nook and cranny of a situation.
But they're not in that person that went through that injury, so they don't really know their thoughts or just guessing.
Well, you know, when I see Tony Romo hurt, I'm like, oh, that's a shame. Go Eagles. So how has your family taken all this? Because you left the job, right?
Yeah, I just left the job, yeah.
You just left your job. When did you leave your job?
In August of 2014.
Okay. And how was that taken by your family?
My wife was a little bit... I gave work like 13 weeks notice. It was like, on this day in August, I'm just leaving because I just can't do this corporate job anymore. My mind doesn't work this way. I can't deal with all these thoughts that are just bouncing around. People are like arguing that their idea is the best to solve a solution. It was like they were just way too serious and I just couldn't go there anymore. I was just having so much fun with life. I just couldn't do that. I mean, from going from a disabled man to fully recovered man, there's like, I have to do something with this. I have to help people in some way.
So you were able to find some support?
What I did when I left my corporate job, I used my old 401k money to fund my business. to establish my business. I used my an old 401k to establish my business to get me at least starting.
Okay. So it's been, it hasn't even been a full year yet. How has the ride been for you so far?
It's been bumpy. It's been real bumpy trying to get myself established out there because my story is really profound. Most people have a hard time accepting it because they're always told through all the media that you can't get rid of bipolar, you can't get rid of multiple sclerosis. They're told these stories over and over again. But there's these outliers. And there's a study in California that actually looks at these people that do spontaneous remission. That's really what I went into, is spontaneous remission of all five diseases. And there are real cases of spontaneous remission. It does happen. But you don't hear about this in the media. It's always take this pill, do this, do that. But it keeps you trapped with that illness. And, you know, it doesn't keep you open to exploring to see what else is out there.
Well, there's a lot of money behind keeping you trapped in that.
Yeah, there is a lot of money because I was spending, like, my one multiple sclerosis medicine was $60,000 a year just for one medicine. It's just like ridiculous money behind medicine, but that's just the way it is. I mean, you just have to be open to, like, these people don't know what's best for you. They're just making the best guess. So just look around, take your medicine and look around, see if you find something else. If you find something else, maybe you can wean off some medicine. So it's worth a try. I had to get to a point where I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. That forced me to look around. It's like, I can't go on living with all these pills and all these ailments. Seeing my team of six doctors, I mean, it was just taking a lot of time to see all my doctors and all the medicine, and wasn't improving. I was actually on a slow decline with multiple sclerosis.
So, I mean, it was actually a physical? I know multiple sclerosis is a physical problem, right? It's a physical handicap that develops over time and gets worse over time.
Right.
But do you believe that part of that was all in your head? Like, you might have had, like, you've had it, and then, but it was your brain was keeping you down. It was as well, you know, because your brain's believing all these other things.
Yeah, that's where it's a little unusual with multiple sclerosis. I think it was in my head because I was so stressed, and that's why I gave myself the autoimmune disease. But I can't explain, like, the physical recovery. Like, I'm actually the world's only known juggler that was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. I went to the Juggling Association and see if they know of anybody that else had multiple sclerosis. I went to some various bloggers and see if they know anybody with multiple sclerosis that can juggle. No one. I'm the only person I know of that has been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis that can juggle. Because my left hand at the time was basically uncoordinated. And now it's fine.
Wow.
Like, my whole left side was not coordinated at all. That's why I needed the cane on occasion.
Wow. So, going back to the accident, do you believe that the accident was part of that?
No, I don't think the accident from when I was 6 years old was a part of it. I think the accident just kept me in a state of worry and fear that something was going to go wrong, you know, because my mom was always in that state of worry, you know, and she became overprotective. Then I became overprotective myself, and it just added to the more the distress, the more worried. Like, when I was in middle school, I lost like a quarter of my body weight because I was so anxious and nervous around other people.
Wow.
But at that time in the 70s, there was no psychiatric children medicine. Wow.
There was, well, not medicine.
But there was no psychiatric for children back in the early 70s. They basically didn't really do much for you. Like, I lost a quarter of my body weight. They did some medical tests, and they said that there's nothing wrong with you, and they just sent me on my way. They never looked into my thoughts process at all.
Ah, man. So the worry wart thing is real. Yeah. So, you know, on your journey that you've been on so far as starting your own business, what's been the biggest roadblock for you?
The biggest roadblock for me is people not accepting my spontaneous remission. That's probably my biggest roadblock, is people just immediately dismissed it because they bought into all the media saying you can't get into a spontaneous remission. These diseases just don't go into remission. They just don't. So people just buy into that and they believe it, but they just close themselves down. So they just have to open themselves up. So I even help people that aren't in with these diseases. It could be people that are like, can't sleep at night, really stressed, really worried. So I just help them quiet that mind, stopping the cops in the head, just slowing the thoughts down and just saying, hey, your thoughts are not the absolute truth.
What are some of the ways that you've overcome people not understanding or accepting this idea that you've been able to bring all these five diseases into remission?
Yeah, it's just a matter of me getting out there and talking to people, doing more YouTube videos, more TV interviews, more podcasts, more radio interviews, and just sharing my story that I am a real person behind this website. You know, I'm really here, and they can come talk to me and ask me any questions. Some people are just too quick to just read it and they dismiss it. They don't just send me an email and say, and ask me questions. Very few people will send me an email and ask me a question. Most of them are just, they'll read my story and then they move on, it seems. But they don't go in, because they even offer, like, if you have any questions, you can give them like a 15-minute session. You can just talk to me free for 15 minutes. And they can just ask me any question they want. And very few people have actually taken me up on that. They're just closing themselves down. They're just not open.
That's interesting. I mean, if I was suffering from one of those diseases, I would think that I would want to at least give it a try. But at the same time, I guess playing devil's advocate, the other side of it would be I would be worried about a sales pitch.
Right. That's the thing, though. That's the thing. They really talk to me. I really don't do much of a sales pitch. That's not my motivation. I just want to help them. And maybe that 15-minute call, I can give them a simple meditation practice that can at least help them, or at least some kind of mindfulness practice. It's just something to help.
I think that the key there is just keep doing the videos, keep doing the interviews, the more content you put out there, the people can feel more comfortable with you. The more likely they are to want to give you those questions, because they feel like they're not going to necessarily get the sales pitch. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or be cornered into a situation that they don't necessarily want to be.
Right. That's what I'm saying. It's taking like 6 months now to actually get my story out there. People are like at least warming up to it. Because when you just try to go right into business with this dramatic story, it doesn't work. And all the coaches that I had were like, oh, you need to do this, this, and this. But they didn't talk about anything like building a reputation, building a following. People like really believe you and just can support you. It's not like you can just quit your job and do this in a month. You need to build. That's what most coaches just bypass. You just can't go from like nothing to like having clients. You have to build rapport with these people and establish relationships and contacts and network with them. And you might talk to somebody for a month or two until they come around saying, yes, you can really help me. And it's just having that patience. They don't tell you that when you initially start a business and you just hire a coach. They just expect that like, okay, you're going to get clients this day. It doesn't happen that way.
Well, you know, a lot of times what I try to tell people, they're like, oh, I want to start a podcast or this or that, and I want to get my story out there. I want to do this. I'm like, look, before you just go quitting your job over it, start it now. Do it now. You know, build that rapport now, even if it's not an everyday, all 24/7 thing. Build it now, and, 6 months, a year from now, you'll already have this many episodes or this much blog content or this, you know, these people following you. And then you could turn that switch and go full time. And yeah, you might not start making money day one, but you'll be that much further along. So when someone finds you, it's like, oh man, they've been doing this for a year already. Never mind, you're only doing it like 1 or 2 days a week, you know, a couple hours a week total.
Right. I've probably been better off that way. When I get my work, like that 13 weeks notice, during that 13 weeks, I was just doing like building my social media platform, but I wasn't really doing that networking that I needed to do that I'm doing today.
Yeah, I definitely got to, you got to start out with something, just start from the beginning. And then once you have that platform, then you can go and make that choice. But you know what? You live and you learn. And it's not the end of the world, and it's not the end of the road.
Right. It's fine. Everything is fine. I know that all is well. It's just a matter of just time. I mean, it's constantly, I don't see anything as a failure, just like feedback. Failure is just feedback. It's like, oh, wait, this didn't work. Let me pivot. And what I'm seeing, my pivot now is more public speaking, making that pivot instead of maybe it's not one-on-one clients I'm after. Maybe it's just public speaking is my path.
Now, being yourself, how has public speaking been a challenge for you?
It's not really much of a challenge.
No?
No, public speaking is okay. I can really give a story. People like hearing my story because they feel inspired by like, oh, this guy's overcome all of this. And I like to have I'm pretty much like a talk. I'm more like a dialogue with the audience and just talk to them, converse with them, saying, hey, this is my mindset before. This is how I was trapped in my mind. Here's some steps you can do today.
Well, I didn't know, because I know that you were saying that, you know, you had trouble talking to people and, you know, when you were growing up and stuff like that. And I didn't know if that still was translating into a fear of public speaking today.
No, there's no fear of public speaking today. It's just because now, before, it was always attached to a label like introvert, shy. I would really attach to those labels and believe that they were true because it was somebody else's opinion that I took as my truth. And now that I'm out there sharing my story, it's a little uncomfortable because it's something new. It's a new journey for me. Like the first time I was on TV and you have 4 cameras in your face, that's a new experience. But you come back and you're like, okay, we're doing this. Let's continue.
How long have you been recovered for?
2.5 years, maybe 3 years without medicine.
Okay. And how old are you now? 48. Awesome. Well, I mean, wow, that's not, you're not like you're a young guy recovering, you know. Wow. Do you regret not trying any of this sooner?
In a way, yeah, but I had to get to a point where I was really sick and tired of being sick and tired for me to really fully engage. Like, I could have tried, like, if I tried like meditation like 10 years ago, I would have tried it for like a day or two and like, this doesn't work. But like, when I came to be 44, it's like, all right, now I'm going to try meditation. I'm going to do 5 minutes a day. And now I know I deserve 5 minutes to myself each day. And that was my mantra. I deserve time to myself each day. And that kept me going. And 10 years ago, I was just too impatient. I've been like, this isn't going to work. Because it was a bipolar brain. It's like, it has to happen now. It has to happen now.
Well, Sam, since this is the Dreamers Podcast, growing up, what was your childhood dream?
My childhood dream would probably be stay in my room and out of the public, actually. It was like not engage with the world because I was very, very shy and introverted as a child. So, but actually my dream today is just giving people hope. That's what I really wanted to see. My dream is that people will take their medicine so seriously and the world so seriously. It's probably not taking the world so seriously. Like, it's opinion versus an opinion. No one's either absolutely right or absolutely wrong. And just ease back, just step back and say, okay, it's just an opinion. It's only true from this perspective. So what's good for this person is bad for another. That's just the way the world works.
Yeah, I could see that. It's a shame that that's what you aspired to be, was a shut-in.
That was a very comfortable place.
But, you know, you've come a long way since then. It took you a lot longer, but you look, I mean, you never would have imagined being where you're at this point.
No.
And how much further you're able to go. I mean, being able to, you know, put your diseases into remission and want to not be a shut-in, but be on a stage in front of, you know, hundreds to thousands of people, is a big deal.
Yeah, it is, because I feel I was blessed with this gift and I just have to share it with the world. It'll be like selfish if I didn't share this sense of hope with the world, this happiness, this joy with the world. You know, I'm not shut in anymore. It's like I need to explore the world. Like, I love wearing in the city like my free hug shirt. I really love to engage people and just really, because most people are just trapped in their mind. When they see someone with a free hug shirt and I make contact with them, they just light up. They just like that contact. Just like, they really don't know what to make of me when they see me in public, but I like to engage people now. It's fun. Life should be fun.
It should be fun. I try to make it as fun as I possibly can, that's for sure. Sam, what do your dreams for the future look like?
I don't really focus too much on the future. What I like to see in the future is that I'm just on these bigger stages, making a difference for people, giving them a sense of hope that it doesn't have to be this way. Try to open them up a little bit. At least them get to see a little bit different way instead of their old way. Maybe we can get just that little shift in somebody. That'll be just ideal. And I could do that if I could just make this eye contact with them and just reassure them that, hey, it's okay. Try this. There's no failure. It's just feedback. If it doesn't work, you try something else. That's the thing with the bipolar. I never tried anything new. I was too afraid to try things new. Unless I was really in a manic phase, then I would try all sorts of things and get myself into trouble. But it's just, you know, you have to have this discernment.
Well, before we share how people can connect with you, do you have any last thoughts you'd like to share?
Yeah, just to slow down and try not to rush around so much and try to enjoy life. Just take that time for yourself to go for those walks or just spend time with the family. Just taking that time and just slowing down and not all this 1,001 things your mind wants you to do. Most of them are unnecessary. Just do those things that are necessary and just enjoy life.
I couldn't have said that better myself. So why don't you let people know how they can connect with you?
Well, what I'm moving into now is I'm with the Being One Center, and that's in Warminster, Pennsylvania. The website is beingonecenter.org, and I'm a resident teacher there. We have some other teachers there for different areas because everybody's a unique individual. They all have different needs. So we have a growing staff, and we're just helping people in ways that they need help. I help people with their mindset. Other people's help with yoga. There's somebody with Reiki, you know, these energy healers. And I do some healing too, but I work with mindset a lot and just helping people with my healing modality that I do. And I just help people in any way they need. But typically, I like to people with their mindset. I help them. If I want to call myself anything, I like to call myself an anti-thought leader. You know, I don't want to keep chasing thoughts. I'd rather let the thoughts go and just live and enjoy life.
I think that's a fair way to be. And I think that, you know, a lot of times we can get wrapped up in our own thoughts way past what we should be, for not just our own good, but the people around us is good at the same time. And, it, you know, if you only put just thought to it, then it's just that. They're just thoughts. They're not necessarily actions. And the actions are what you can make a real difference with.
Right. It's those little actions that you make. It's just need those little steps each day just to improve your life. Instead of looking at the really long-term goal, look at the immediate future. Like, what can I do right now in this moment to make the next moment a little bit better? And not looking in the past. The mind loves to look in the past. And with these thoughts, I mean, there's big studies of how worry impacts children and stress, how it impacts children. And most doctors ignore it because they don't want to get into the parent's life. Like, there's a big study out there that most doctors ignore. Highly stressed parents, kids of highly stressed parents are more likely to be asthmatic. And that has been proven.
So I guess the lesson there is don't worry, be happy.
Right, just always be happy and just realize that everything's going to be okay. And just see that the mind is just creating this story, these circumstances, this event. And now it's not the end of the world. You're still here. As long as you're breathing, you still have a chance.
Well, I'll have the website on the show notes at howtodream.co so people can find it and connect with you.
Great.
Well, I really appreciate you coming to the show. I really appreciate you giving me a copy of your book. I hope everyone goes and checks it out. It's I Don't Dwell by Sam J. Shelley. And I will have a link to it on the show notes as well. So thank you again for coming on the show, and I'd love to have you on again in like about a year and check in and see how you're doing.
All right. Sounds great, Joe. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Dreamers Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Dreamers Podcast. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/Dreamers Podcast. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the Dreamers Podcast, please send an email to j@jpar.co. This podcast is copyright 2014 by jpar.co.
Hey Dreamers, Joe here. I really appreciate you listening to Dreamers Podcast. If you'd like to find out how to support the show, please visit howtodream.co/support for all the ways you can help out. Thanks for the support, and please keep on dreaming.